Are you a Catholic woman who loves your faith, but finds certain aspects of living it out challenging and confusing? Are you a Catholic wife striving for a healthy, holy marriage and sex life, but don't know where to turn for straightforward, faithful, nitty-gritty answers to some of your deep and delicate questions? Are you a Catholic mom who's tired of the compare and despair game we all fall victim to on social media, and are just in need of some solidarity as you discover your own unique motherhood? Are you tired of the sunshine and rainbows pitch? Want to lean into the both and of the mess that happens when the truths of our faith get lived in a fallen world? Well, if that's where you find yourself, you're in the right place. Hi, I'm Emily Frazee, your host of the Total Wine Podcast. I'm here to dig deep and tackle topics that we are all curious about, but maybe too afraid to ask. I'll answer it all with honesty and humor, because living the faithful life can make you either laugh or cry, and well, laughing burns more calories. Welcome to the show. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Total Wine Podcast. All right, I just need to get something off of my chest. First of all, it's All Souls Day. Yesterday was All Saints Day. The day before that was All Hallows Eve, or Halloween, depending on how you want to describe it. I don't know about you moms, but I sort of feel like I got hit by a train. Like every single day this week has felt like Friday, and I don't really know which end is up. And it's felt like that at the end of October. So anyway, just wanted to come out and say that if you are just feeling like you're running around like a chicken with your head cut off, you're in good company. We are in this boat together. And I hope that today's episode can just be a little reprieve and a little respite, because I got to have a wonderful conversation with Emily Stimson Chapman. See, I still can't even talk right. About her new book, The Supper of the Lamb, which is a children's book, a story about the Mass. And it's, y'all, it's beautiful. I was so pleasantly surprised when I read the book, which I had not received a copy of the book by the time we recorded the episode. It was literally sitting on my front porch and my postman neglected to ring the doorbell, and it was raining outside, so I didn't go check the mail. You know, one of those situations. But I got it and I read it to my daughter the next day, and I was so pleasantly surprised, not at the fact that it was a beautiful book, but Emily shares in the episode that she wrote this, part of telling the story of the Mass with the images, the beautiful images and so on, is to capture the child's imagination about the Mass, to start giving them some concepts and some language and some ideas. And what was surprising was, you know, if you read children's books, you know, when you're a grown up, sometimes the wonder and the awe of the story can go over your head because you're not looking at it with the eyes of a child. That did not happen when I read this book. I felt like I was equally as captured and captivated as my six-year-old daughter. And I've been a lifelong Catholic. I'm a cradle Catholic. You know, I've gone to Mass my whole life. But there was just something so beautiful about this book that captivated me. And so not only do I get to share this book with my children, but I get to share it in a way where we both get to be excited about it. We're both captivated and captured by what's happening in this story. And that was a really beautiful, pleasant surprise. And of course, it was just a reminder to me that, oh yeah, right, we are supposed to be childlike. And for those of us who have kids, you know, the hallmarks of children is that there is so much wonder and awe because everything is still new, everything is still big. And they're not afraid to admit they don't know something. You know, and these are all, of course, like fundamental dispositions of humility, which is really what being childlike is all about. It's about being humble. It's about recognizing our littleness so that we can behold big things. And that is something that I think this book certainly gives us. Now, of course, I couldn't have a conversation with Emily and not talk about other things. So we talked about the challenges that we face as mothers with passing on the faith to our children, particularly in this kind of, you know, nutso world. We talked a little bit about, you know, the crazy world of Instagram, but Emily just shared so many beautiful nuggets that I am going to be chewing on for some time to come, and I'm sure you will be too. So enjoy today's episode. It's such a joy and a pleasure and honor to bring this to you and to have been able to talk with her just one-on-one about, I don't know, just things that I've always wanted to talk with her about. So enjoy. And if you want to look into purchasing the book again, that link is in the show notes. You can use my code FRAZY10 for 10% off through November 22nd. That code does expire. So again, you can use the code starting today, November 2nd, but it will expire November 22nd, 2023. You can still use the link to purchase the book, but the code, the 10% off code, will expire. So if you're looking for Christmas gifts, if you got nieces, nephews, your kids, godchildren, this would be a wonderful gift. And again, you know, I don't necessarily know that there's an age limit on this, because like I said, I felt just as captivated by it as my six-year-old daughter. So do with that what you will, and enjoy our conversation. I know it's late in the evening, but hello, you're here. We are here to talk about your book, but first we are talking about the aging process, because you started telling me about, and mid-conversation my recording decided to stop. So we are starting this over again, trying to capture the magic. But you said you were telling me about turning 40 and how things start to happen and unravel, and people don't talk about that till you hit 60.
But nobody likes to talk about perimenopause. So I didn't even know perimenopause was a thing until I was trying to conceive. And I'm like, I just thought there was menopause. Like, you hit an age and everything stopped. No one tells you there's like this 10 to 15 year period of hormonal changes and body changes. And I felt very unprepared for.
Yes. I actually, so this is obviously like in the fertility awareness work that I do, like this is something that everybody who's very vocal right now about fertility awareness is like, hey, where's this whole piece about perimenopause? Like, we need to start talking. So I think it's like, it's coming, but it's like everybody who's going through perimenopause, who's talking about fertility awareness, is doing the whole, like, why haven't we been talking about this stuff? Okay. I will talk about it. Like, let's get this stuff going. So yeah, all the stuff that nobody tells you. I remember when I hit 30, all of a sudden my liver was just like, if you don't drink enough water, I'm going to treat you like you drank an entire bottle of wine. And I'm like, whoa, hold up. It's like, make the punishment fit the crime here.
Yeah. Body, just no matter how good you take care of it, it's still age comes for all of us. Age comes, happens.
Yeah. So. Oh, the reminders of the fallen world. But anyway, but I guess that's kind of a good segue, because we're going to talk about something that is far more uplifting, which is your new book, The Supper of the Lamb, that you co-authored with Scott Hahn, that is coming out. Actually, when this episode airs, it will be today. It is available now. So you can get the link in the show notes. But I'm so excited to talk to you about this, because we have your book, Mary, Mother of All. Beautifully illustrated, beautiful poetry, all of the truths captured about Our Lady, and my kids love it. It's on rotation. My son loves whenever I read it to him. And this is the second in the series, right? So there's going to be three total, and this is the second.
At least six. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. I thought there was three. Wow.
No, we're just going to keep on going. As long as people want to buy them, I'm just going to keep turning Scott's books into kids' books.
Oh, I love it. Well, can you share like what the other topics are? Are they going to be slow reveals?
The next one, it's already done writing wise. So it's heading to illustration soon, is based on Lord Have Mercy. So it's about the sacrament of confession.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. And so we thought it'd be a good follow up to the Lamb's Supper. Yeah. And then we're not sure. We just decide once one goes off what the next one's going to be. My guess is we might do A Father Who Keeps His Promises next, and really look at the idea of covenant and building a family through covenants. So, like children's topics.
Right. But I mean, this is so fantastic, because I mean, obviously, as you know, we both have three children. How old is your oldest now?
Five. He's five.
Five. Okay. So my oldest is about 6 and a half. My middle is five. My baby is one. You know, like, still in this very young stage of life, and this huge question for moms right now is like, how do we pass the faith on to our kids in this world where everything just feels, I don't know, muddled or just absolute black and white? But how do we take the big truths of our faith and transmit them to our children in a way that they can absorb and that they are eager to learn and that they want to learn. And
yeah, I mean, the idea behind the books is really to help children and their parents, because a lot of parents can understand things on a big level, but not know how to break it down. Other parents never got through the Scott Hahn book. So to help the little ones who are being read to and the parents who are doing the reading, to help them learn to read scripture from the heart of the church. So to see the unity between the Old Testament and the New Testament, to start thinking through ideas about typology, you know, how the New Testament is concealed in the Old and the Old Testament is revealed in the New. And then covenant, you know, the making, God's making of a family. So these ideas, these big, big ideas, but to break them down in simple ways for kids so that little kids get a language, and it's like showing them a big painting and they're not going to fully understand the painting. They're not going to understand everything that's happening in it, but they're getting familiar with the landscape. They're learning the language. They're learning how to navigate these things so that when they get bigger and we start talking to them about more serious theology, it's not like, what is this covenant thing? What is this? Wait, the Old Testament and the New Testament are connected. I thought there was, it's to make it familiar with them. And then again, for the parents. So even if parents have a really good understanding of typology and covenant, not everybody is good at saying, well, how do I explain that to my five-year-old? Like, how do I break down these really great ideas into language that a five-year-old will find engaging? And so that's what I am doing with the writing of the books, is breaking them down.
No, I appreciate that so much, because that's happened to me so many times. My daughter will ask me a question and I'm like, how do I explain this in six-year-old terms? You know, it's like, I know the answer to what she's asking, but I know that if I give the answer that I know, it's going to go right. It's like, wait, what are you talking about? Like, it's not in 5-year-old, 6-year-old terminology. And she's actually, we've done like our homeschool program this year. It's a classical program, but everything that you just described is that same thing. Like, we're going to introduce kids to these big ideas, to these big things. But at this age, we're going to let them play with the concepts. We're going to let them have fun with them. It's not so important that they grasp them in their entirety so much as it is that we just introduce them to it. So it's in their brains. And like you said, when it comes back down the road, like, oh, I know about covenant. I remember when I was a little kid and I was reading this book and I remember talking about covenant and I remember the pictures and oh yeah, okay, it's not so jarring.
Yeah, and we're so lucky because the Bible is a story. You know, salvation history is a story. And humans are made to learn through stories, which is why God tells us about himself through a story. And so when we start introducing our kids to the story of salvation history in stories that are fun and that rhyme and engage them, it's a way of capturing their imagination before their mind has been fully formed. So if you capture their imagination, you capture their heart with the beauty of salvation history and the drama of salvation history and the characters of salvation history, that is the first step towards a lifelong relationship with Christ, really them learning who Christ is and how he loves them and helping them to become disciples. But you know, it starts with a story, which is what God did. Yeah. So that's what we're trying to do.
And it's so perfect because obviously the liturgy and the mass is beautiful. I mean, that is just like the peak beauty of our faith. I mean, architecturally with the church and it, hopefully the way it's built and the way it's decorated, there's something there visually to draw us into that beauty. And then that other piece that we can start planting seeds now of understanding the liturgy. What does all this mean? Where does all this come from? Let's introduce this story. Like you said, I love that. That when you go to mass, it's not just, okay, kids sit in the pew and now kneel down and then we're going to go up, you know, the Catholic calisthenics thing. It's like, no, something's happening.
Yeah, it was fun because there's a picture in the book of the priest saying mass. And in the book we chose to do, the priest is saying mass ad orientem because visually it's just a much better representation.
Yes.
He's holding up the body. You know, there's the priest saying mass and he's holding up the Eucharist. And Christ on the cross is above him, and the Father is above him, and the Spirit is above the Father, and then angels are all around. And we were looking at that in the book, and our parish has Mass ad orientem. So my son goes, wow, that looks like a really special Mass. Is that a special Mass? I was like, honey, that's every Mass.
That's and every then Mass,
we're at church on Sunday, and the priest was holding up Christ in the consecration, I was able to say, Toby, look, it looks just like the picture in Mama's book. And he was like, oh, but the angels aren't there. I was like, well, they're invisible. But yeah, just how the art creates links for kids to, it all works together. We're visual creatures. We're creatures who learn through story. And so how do you connect it to lay a foundation for faith is the challenge. That has to, of course, be lived out by you and, modeled by you and talked about in conversations, and storybooks alone are not gonna do it, but it's a good start.
Yeah. And it's a crucial element. It's one of those things that you can live it out, but you still need to have, like you said, something to capture their imagination. What better story than giving them the story of scripture? But you said that this is literally your favorite thing you've ever written, and you've written a lot.
I read a lot.
You've written a lot. I was reading your Substack article from today, which I loved. But you write, I mean, this is obviously your love and your passion. So I know you've talked about it in other areas, but I'm just so captivated by the fact that you said this is your favorite thing you've ever written. And I'd love to hear you share why that is.
Well, I always say I'm a translator. So for most of my writing career, what I do is I take complex ideas about the faith and I make them more accessible to your average lay Catholic. So I take very scholarly ideas and try to present them in a beautiful, engaging, accessible way. And doing that, I mean, I've been working with Scott for 20 years on different projects. His Genesis, like all of the Journey Through Scripture Bible studies, St. Mm-hmm. Paul Center does, I've helped with edit and write those. And so to get the chance to take these ideas that I've been writing about for 20 years and that have so profoundly shaped the way I understand the faith and put it into a format for kids, first off, is great. But the rhyming is so much fun, and it is hard, like, to get accurate rhyme and accurate meter with complex theological concepts that I'm boiling down for kids is extremely challenging. Walk around like a crazy woman when I'm doing these books, like trying to figure out how do I get this to rhyme? What's going to rhyme with sacrifice? And how do we talk about shedding goat's blood and, accessible to kids? And it's just like this ongoing mental puzzle that's incredibly hard, but it's just so fun when it all comes together.
Yes.
It just feels like a little miracle where you're receiving, help from God. I always say God rearranges my words. He's my editor, because I'll write stuff and I'll look at it later and go, did I actually write that? I don't remember writing that.
Yeah.
God fixes things. It was just such a delight to write this book, and to write about the Mass is in a way that hopefully will capture children's imagination and be a part of the Eucharistic revival, that the bishops are calling for over the next couple of years. I think this is a well-timed book, but
yeah.
But mostly it was just fun to try to tell the story of salvation history and rhyme and correct meter, because I'm strange like that.
No, it makes sense. It's like, it's a huge challenge, and there's something so gratifying about, having that challenge and then being able to tackle it and meet it. It's like, yes, you got it. Like, I know that feeling. Yeah.
It's so much easier to write an adult book about the Mass than to write a rhyming children's book about it.
I can imagine. So. I feel like I would have exhausted Google synonym searches and
trust me, I always have little rhyming things open to what are the rhymes thing? What are the words that could possibly work with this as we put the next couplet together? Yeah. And yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. Well, I love hearing that, because now I'm gonna go back to Mary, Mother of All, and I'm gonna read it with that in mind now and just have a new appreciation, a new layer. So I love that. So obviously, we've been in the Instagram world, and it is good, bad, and everything in between. And I know that you encounter these questions a lot. I encounter these questions a lot from moms, trying to pass down this stuff to the faith. What is kind of the most, I don't know, if you could, what is something that you want moms to know? You're in the trenches, I'm in the trenches. We have so many beautiful resources available to us. And yet I hear so often, and I know you hear it too, that there is this fear to a certain degree or concern that moms have about how do we really imbue the love of the faith into our kids. And sometimes it does boil down to how do I just get my kid to sit still in mass? Like, oh, they're acting up and all this type of stuff. And I hear so much of like how to embrace the joy in motherhood when kids are being psychos at times.
Kids be psychos, whatever are you talking about? Maybe
How does
your children, Emily, but not
that work?
my
Never
children.
mind. Yes. What would you like moms to know who might be in that phase of wondering what that looks like in a practical way and struggling with
I mean, I'm just like trying to figure this out with everybody else. I've got my
it?
oldest is a 5-year-old. Things could go very, very south, Emily,
You
and
know, I think
I
that
don't know.
honestly, that is probably what most people need to hear is that I actually had somebody tell me recently, I said something about how my day, like I was doing some work and then the kids did XYZ. And so I told my husband, like, honey, you need to grill tonight because dinner got put on the back burner. And she was like, oh, so think like you do have to make these trade-offs. I was like, yeah, how do you think this gets done?
See the state of my kitchen right now. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, you should
Yep.
have seen the state of my room before I got on this podcast. I was like, I have to do something.
I like I said, I'm trying to figure this out. I watched some Protestant influencers or some Catholic influencers who are phenomenally confident in their parenting, and they're usually in their 20s or 30s. And I was like, I think you've got to come back to me in 30 years because I've watched a lot of Catholic families raise their kids.
Yeah.
And so much is unpredictable and out of your control. There are, what is it that, the Spanish saying, 10 kids, one a priest, one a thief. There's,
My husband calls it the law of averages.
yeah. So, like, kids are going to do what kids are going to do to a certain extent. There's always going to be, it's just so much is out of your control. What you can
Yes.
control, I think, is your relationship with Jesus and having an authentic relationship with Christ, where you are on your knees begging for grace and telling him thank you and sharing your heart and letting your kids see your relationship with Christ, like letting you them know that, okay, what so we were walk we go before I drop my son off at a little hybrid homeschool, I will grab all three of them and we trot into the church for a little 5-minute visit with Jesus before we go. And I'll often tell them what I'm going to pray about, like, oh, mommy really has some things she needs to talk to God about. I've been stressed about this, or I really want to thank him that I get to be your mommy. And then we go in and we pray for a few minutes and we're a hot mess and everyone sees us. And then we trot out again and I say, oh, that was so good to be with Jesus. Like, it really helped mommy to be near to him. I love him so much. And I was able to thank him for you and ask him for help with this day. And so just modeling in a really free way what an authentic relationship with Christ looks like, and then letting them see the fruits of that in my life. So when I screw up and lose my temper, when I should not be losing my temper, apologizing to my kids and saying, that was mommy told Jesus she's sorry, and I want you to know how sorry I am, and will you forgive me? I think those sorts of things do more in the long run than all of the, I mean, catechism lessons are important. Children's books, especially ones that rhyme by,
Hint, hint,
redheaded
Supper of
authors, be
the
very important. But
Lamb.
if you don't have an authentic relationship with Christ where you are letting him into your heart and letting him heal your wounds and help letting him give you the grace you need to mother those kids, then it's all for naught. Like, that's the most important thing. And I think everything else will flow from that. And your kids will make their own choices because they are their own people and they're going to have their own struggles. And you're not going to be the only person who can shape them or affect them. But the more you can model for them what an authentic relationship with Christ looks like, I think hope, pray, beg Jesus that that will set them up down the road for a real fruitful life with him.
Yeah, that all reminds me. I saw an interview with Dr. Gregory Popchak talking about kind of answering this question, and he said that the stats that he was looking at said that the biggest predictor of faith practice later in life was whether or not the faith was the source of warmth in the home. And I think that's I love that so much because a lot of times when we think about faith practice, we think about rigor. We think about, it needs to look a certain way. And when I think about looking a certain way, all I think is like, hey, we all saw shiny, happy people. Stop that. No, very bad. It's not about the perception. It is about the interior disposition and how we let that interior disposition flow into how we behave. And I love that. I never thought about doing what you said, like actually telling your kids, this is what I'm going to pray for, but making it that obvious and articulating that is powerful. It's like, oh, mommy's going to talk to Jesus about that she's glad to be my mommy. Like, what a beautiful gift to give them.
Well, it's amazing how many grown women I talk to who don't know how to talk to Jesus that way. Like, they don't know what prayer is. They learned their Hail Marys and the Our Fathers and the Mass, but they don't trust that Jesus wants to hear what they have to say. They don't trust that Jesus isn't there judging them all day long. Like, oh, why didn't you get the dishes done? Why didn't you meet that deadline? Like, they really don't believe that Jesus is more interested in them than what they do. And so, if I can show my kids early on, like, Jesus really cares about mommy, and mommy really wants to share these things with Jesus, I am trusting that that will set them up to have a more authentic prayer life themselves. And I love praying the rosary, and I love the mass, and I love all the church's rich traditions of prayer. But so I'm giving a talk on Friday night, and it's the first talk I've given in 3 years. It's just to like my parents,
Ooh.
mom's group. And I'm not
But
writing it
still,
out. I'm not quite sure what I'm going to say, but they asked me to talk about praying in the chaos. And I think I've got lots of different thoughts that I will tie together somehow. But I do think that when we get fixed into prayer as this very formal thing in the midst of all the chaos of motherhood, we can forget that prayer at its most basic is looking at Jesus. You know, John Paul II talks about like that is the fundamental of prayer, is you're looking at Jesus. And if you're not looking at Jesus all day long and talking to him all day long and sharing your heart all day long, when you go to do the formal prayers in church, or you sit down with your rosary, because there's not this deep bond of heart, you know, core, like heart to heart, that's been there through the constant praying, it makes those formal prayers less fruitful because you're not bonded to Jesus, like your heart, you're not looking to him all day long for sustenance. So, and I think that's that no matter how busy you are, you can look at Jesus. Like, no matter how crazy the day is, no matter how chaotic goes, we can all look at him. And if your children see you looking at him, you know, that tells them more than most things.
I've that has been, I mean, obviously all I think all mothers, we have to go through this. It's this wild transformation because obviously, when we were single, when we were newly married before kids entered the picture, like we could have these wonderful mountaintop moments. Like we could spend hours in adoration. We could have all of this quiet. And it's, I think there's it, well, it's a transformation process that does involve a little bit of grief of like, yeah, that those days are gone for right now in order to be able to step into. Nope, you're praying in the chaos right now, and it's not less valuable. It's just different. And the way that we tackle it is different. I've started doing this practice where when I look at my kids, and I like the idea of saying it out loud. I'm going to start adopting that. It's going to feel weird at first, like most of it. But just when I'm looking at my kids and I'm feeling overwhelmed, or I'm feeling just extremely happy, like I'm looking at them and I'm so proud, just calling Jesus in that moment with me. Like both of us looking at it and beholding it together, you know, and just having him in me feeling that joy together is like it's like 2 seconds, but there is that connection and that unity, and it doesn't have to be this long, hours long prayer. Like that's enriching enough in and of itself.
Yeah, I think we're often under the mis. Like, I remember back in grad school, you know, I could go to adoration every night, mass every day, and every year since then, it's been more and more of a struggle. You know, your career gets busier, and then there's kids, and then there's more kids, and there's I've had to realize that we tend to think of as chaos as the abnormal part. Like, oh, someday when I have more time, someday this is going to calm down, but like, chaos is the normal. Like, this is normal. It's I talked in the Substack today about how C.S. Lewis is talking about how war is actually normal. Like, times of peace are the abnormal parts. In our lives, times of peace tend to be the abnormal parts. They're wonderful and beautiful when they come, but most of life is crazy, and it's kids, and it's caring for aging parents, and we're aging ourselves. And if you don't learn to pray in the chaos, like if you're continually waiting to get back to that idyllic time in grad school when you could go to adoration every night and read theology in front of the Blessed Sacrament. Like, that is not coming back until you're maybe 80. And by then, if you haven't been doing it for the past 60 years, you're not going to be doing it when you're 80.
It's yeah, that it's okay for our prayer lives to change. And I, somebody described it to me at one point that a prayer life is a life. It doesn't look the same your entire lifespan through, and it's not supposed to. So the fact that it's changing doesn't mean that you've lost something or that you're not being as good of a Christian or Catholic for praying. This is I have a lot of Protestant friends, a couple of them actually converted, but a lot they have a rich, spontaneous prayer life. And I've learned a lot from just, they just say it. It's like it's just coming out. And it's like they don't stumble over it. And they just and I'm like, there's something to be said for that comfort with God that we can should be able to develop too. And again, tying this back into the Eucharist, like we receive Christ physically into our bodies, like name me anything more intimate, more unitive, we should be able to talk with him comfortably as a friend, as a brother, as a father.
And some of us are better at talking than others. There's downsides to praying everything. If everything is out loud, sometimes it can be for show. And I was a Protestant for a number of years, and I knew lots of beautiful, spontaneous people who just were very gifted with praying. And then there was always the, oh Lord, bless her, because you can't hear gossip too.
Bless her little heart.
Which is again why your relationship with Jesus has to be authentic. Because when you're truly seeking an authentic relationship with him, and you know he's watching everything, like you're not going to pray in a way that's going to be manipulative or gossipy, because you're aware of his presence. And so it all starts with your core relationship, and from there the prayer can grow and change and develop, and hopefully teach the kids how to pray as well. So.
And teaching them through that example that it's like, it's okay if you're not a good talker. It's God. He made you. He's aware.
He knows your heart. Like, you can just say, thank you, Lord. He hears your heart. But to be able to share your thoughts, and we expect kids, we teach them how to do math, we teach them how to read, we teach them all these other things. So teaching them to really pray, to have a relationship with God, we can't just expect them to pick it up by osmosis. We have to model it for them.
What would you say to somebody who's having a hard time with that modeling?
It depends on which way they're having a hard time with it.
Okay, well, let's say that maybe they're struggling, like they maybe it's more because this is what I come across more often. It's more of a legalistic, rigoristic kind of view of prayer that it needs to be a certain way and that you say your rosary and that type of thing, and that this whole concept of spontaneous prayer and Jesus wants to receive me is foreign. It's like that's what I want to give my kids, but I don't understand it for myself.
I think for someone in that position, journaling can be really helpful. Like, if you're not used to sharing, to sit in front of the Blessed Sacrament for even for 15 minutes, if you have 15 minutes to sit and just try to write something to the Lord, to get in the habit of putting down your thoughts, and sometimes making it more formal and concrete, can help. But I mean, there's nothing like adoration. Like, when you sit and you look at Jesus and he looks back at you, and that intimacy that flows within the context of adoration, I think, is fundamental for having a deep contemplative prayer life. And then from there, hopefully that grows. But yeah, I don't know, because that's never been a struggle for me. I'm a redhead and I talk nonstop. So I'm sure Jesus sometimes is like, enough, Emily, I got it. You're stressed out. I hear you. I know you're stressed. Okay, just let's try silence. So it's so counter to my personality to not just want to share my heart with the Lord in every way. It's sometimes harder for me to just sit, like, and to just take the time to just receive his word. I think Lectio Divina can be really good for that, if you're struggling to sit, where you just read and something jumps out and you meditate on it. I think the rosary is great for that. Like, the rosary isn't a legalistic prayer. The rosary is a beautiful contemplative prayer that calls us to reflect on Jesus's life. I think if you're struggling to be legalistic with the rosary, it's good to shake it up. So on All Saints Day, I might just pray all about the Ascension. I'll pray five mysteries reflecting on the Ascension,
I've
or
done that before. Yeah, it's really good.
it is
Yeah.
like on Good Friday, just to really meditate, like
Yep.
one, like meditate the whole Good Friday. Dive into scripture, like reading scripture, and just giving yourself a little flexibility to think with Mary about Jesus can help break open new fronts for prayer too, I think. But I'm not a mystic. I'm just like a person who chats with Jesus a lot in the midst of the
Well,
chaos. I'm
yeah,
not
but that's,
levitating or bilocating. I don't know.
yeah, none of us really want to do that. And I think even
I
the
would love
saints
to
too.
bilocate. What are you talking
Okay,
about?
bilocation, that would be great. That would be fantastic. But the levitating, no, thank you.
As long as I don't have the stigmata, I'm good, I think. I still want the stigmata. It would be so inconvenient. I could not get stuff done. It just would not work for my schedule.
I remember I read Secret Inset's biography of Catherine of Siena. I think she was the one that people would do weird stuff to her when
Oh, yeah,
she,
like
they
in
would like,
poker when she was in ecstasy, or like bounce her bet against the cement. And
So this is like my conception of like levitating and being a mystic, and I'm like, I'm good.
yeah, I don't want any ecstatic trances. Bilocation, I think would be
Yes.
awesome, but no ecstatic trances for me. That feels
Purely
like
for selfish purposes.
bruise easily. I just don't need people poking at me, but
No.
bilocating would be useful.
Yeah, I would love to stay home and go pick up my son at the same time. That'd be awesome.
You can go to mass and get work done. Or
Oh.
who was the saint that actually he would go to mass and the angels would plow the fields for him? Was it Saint Isidore the farmer?
That sounds right.
Yeah, I think it was
I'm
Saint
not
Isidore.
100% sure, but that sounds right.
I would also be cool with me going to mass and the angels cleaning my house
That
or
would be awesome.
doing some
What
work for me.
level of spiritual life do you have to be
I
on, and
know.
how do you get there?
Yeah, right. Like, okay, I'd love
Please.
to be a saint so I can have a clean house and get to mass.
Right. Yes, I want angels to. Oh man, what a clean house. It would probably smell amazing.
Without harmful fragrances. Give me like the
Essential
best,
oils,
like essential oil candle.
all incense.
Incense. Yes,
Yes,
it would be incense. Your
yes.
house would smell like a holy
Oh,
place.
man. Now, see, now you've captured me. I'm going to daydream in the worst possible way, though.
Inspiration for holiness.
There we go. Well, Emily, I'm so excited about this book. It is out today. The Supper of the Lamb that you co-wrote with Scott Hahn. And who is the author? I blanked on her name, the
Oh, Trisha
artist.
Duguid. Trisha. Yeah,
Okay.
Trisha. She does
She
she's really talented.
did absolutely beautiful work. I'm so excited. I have not received my copy yet,
Oh, you
but
haven't. Everyone
I
else
have
is getting
not.
theirs today, so I was hoping you'd have yours.
Well, I'm excited to get
Cool.
my copy. If not today, hopefully tomorrow, just in time for us to go to Mass for All Saints Day. That'll be perfect.
Which is our favorite holy days of obligation in the middle of the week with small children.
During breakfast or lunch or dinner, it's never,
I
I
know. That's
know.
what my husband and I were just talking about in the car on the way home. We're like, all right, what mass are we gonna pick? Like, I always say it's Russian roulette. Like, what? You just don't know. It
I
could be
know.
okay, or you
Or
could have to
it
take a bullet. You just
could.
don't know.
It's either going to be great or a disaster. There's no in between.
Yeah.
None. Yeah, I know. They need some moms to come in there and be like, listen, I know that people getting out of work need to come to mass, but there are also mothers trying to raise the next generation of saints who need a little love.
Promise there's in truth there's like no good time for, I mean, we love 10 a.m. on Sundays is a good mass time for us because it's in between nap times, and usually when they're so little they're sleeping in the morning, they can sleep on you in mass. But after that it's all ugly.
Yeah, it's Russian roulette. Like you said, that's a perfect visual. That's exactly what it is. Sometimes there's more than one bullet in there, so
Yeah, I mean, you might just get a bullet at every mass. You don't know. You don't know.
it might be a full chamber. Who knows?
We live on the edge, we moms do.
I
Yes.
know. I know. I joke sometimes. I'm like, I dare God if I go up to the pearly gates and he's like, all right, and you have so much purgatory time. I'm like, no. You saw it all. I have done my time. Thank you. I'm ready to come in.
Yeah, no, I'm just looking forward to the day when we're actually starting to be able to stay in the pew for almost all of Mass now. This has been a really amazing thing, but that's at our Sunday 10 o'clock time. So I don't, it'll be another huge milestone when I'm actually just able to sit through most of a Holy Day of Obligation Mass, I think.
Yeah, we got to that point right before we had our baby, and now we're back in the, yeah, and he's very active. I like Catholic calisthenics did not prepare me for the amount of movement this child does.
No, that was all my kids have been crazy active, and they were all so close together that they all just dragged each other down into one big morass of like manic movement. So
the worst peer pressure. Yeah,
it is. It's terrible.
So. Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I know this is the later evening. It's like we're at the end of the day and we're about to just fall over. And
I'm gonna go wash my face and get my jammies and go to bed. So
yep, no, I hear you. Well, thank you so much for joining me, and I'm so excited about this book. Again, that is Supper of the Lamb, Emily Chapman and Scott Hahn, out today. Check the show notes and get your copy. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. I hope it brightened your day and that you laughed as much as you learned. If you're enjoying the show and want more people to learn about what I share here, please leave a review and even share with a friend. I hope you'll join me again soon. Until then.